Peter Tuz, president of Chase Investment Counsel, co-manager of the Chase Growth Fund, is here. We're talking growth stocks now in the Money Life Market Call. Welcome to the Market Call, the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for that determines their buys and sells, what they see happening broadly on the market, and how they put it all together. And today we are talking about, well, sort of all cap growth stocks, growth at a reasonable price, because that is what they do at Chase Investment Counsel. And my guest is Peter Tuz. He's president of Chase Investment Counsel and co-manager of the Chase Growth Fund. It's C-H-A-S-X. And if you're looking for more information, you're going to go to chaseinv.com. Peter Tuz, it's great to have you back on Money Life.
Thank you, Chuck. It's great to be here.
We always start with methodology, and yours, like I said, all cap and growth at a reasonable price. But reasonable means different things to different people. And heck, growth these days means different things to different people. So explain what it is that you're looking for.
You're right, Chuck. Basically, reasonable to us means a P.E. ratio reasonable to a company's growth rate. 20 times P.E. for a stock growing at 20%, for earnings growing at 20% per year is fine with us. 20 P.E. for a company whose earnings are growing at 10% per year would be expensive in our view. We do, and we are cognizant of the economic environment, obviously, but we tend to look for stocks with 10% earnings growth for the past 5 years and the likelihood for more of the same for a few years down the road. Obviously, things are relative. So in a time of slower growth, we look for the higher growing companies in our universe.
What do you do in a market like this one where growth, again, it may be relative, but there's not a lot of it out there, relatively speaking? You know, is it harder to find growth stocks right
definitely
now?
Definitely harder to find. It is definitely harder to find. I mean, coming out of COVID, 21 compared to 20 was a great year as far as earnings. 22 compared to 21, much less so. This 23 compared to what 22 was, you have to pick your spots very carefully. So, you know, our process is a weekly screening process that incorporates both fundamental and technical indicators. The fundamentals are the earnings, the revenues, the return on equity, et cetera. The technicals are more of a timing tool. It's where a stock is relative to its history, its relative strength compared to the overall market. Again, a timing tool. We look when those two things are in sync, company's likely to buy for us. When they're not in sync, it's either a hold or we pass on to something else.
Well, and it's funny because you say it's harder to find things. Of course, the flip side of it is that last year when the market went down so much, that should have made more things, at least the reasonable price part of the equation.
Yeah, it did. It certainly did.
In terms of how you construct a portfolio, you know, how tight do you want it to be? How concentrated or how broad? And how do you decide what you're going to replace? I mean, if you're finding out better relative value, do you make a change?
Yeah. Taking the number of stocks first, I would say that basically we are usually between 30 and 40 stocks. We consider that fairly diversified. Other people consider it fairly concentrated. But, you know, we don't let any narrow industry group be more than about 10% of the portfolio. We get nervous when a single stock is above 6% of a portfolio. So we pay a lot of attention to diversification, even though we hold a few number of stocks. The same to regards to the second part of your question, the same technical indicators that we use to screen new stocks, we measure each of our holdings against. And if we start to see a relative strength of a stock or a group decline, just the stock break below its 50 and 200 day moving averages, it's a candidate for sale, and we might sell half of it, we might sell all of it, but we replace it with something moving up in our methodology.
So let's talk about specifics. Let's talk about a name or two that really works for you in these conditions.
Yeah, two of the more recent purchases are Textron and Tractor Supply. Probably fairly well-known name to most of your readers, Textron. It's a company with a market cap of about $15 billion. That basically operates in the airline jet engine kind of motor vehicle business. The with a lot of parts that go into engines and things like that. You know, defense is obviously a growing area for us. Aviation is a growing area worldwide. Automobiles, especially the movement to electric automobiles, is a growing business. So we think the company's going to have probably 12% growth for the next few years, earnings growth for the next few years, and selling for about 17 times earnings, you know, a market multiple seemed to us to be attractive. Tractor Supply is a retailer. I believe it has about 2,500 stores that that cater to people who live, I'll say, beyond the suburbs. And they sell mostly things for taking care of animals, for maintaining property, for maintaining farm vehicles, et cetera. Based in Nashville, it's still a company that could expand stores across the country for several years. So it kind of took off during COVID, and it hasn't really slowed down since.
Yeah, it's become a bit of a darling on Wall Street,
yeah,
where people have even said like it might be, you know, the next kind of dividend aristocrat stock. The growth makes sense to me. It's the reasonable price on that stock. Like, at what point do you wind up saying if it stays that darling? I mean, it's, I want to say the PE last time I checked on that was almost 25.
Yeah, you're right about that. You know, you got to watch something like that and pay attention to any deceleration in earnings. But we haven't seen it yet, so we still like the stock.
So let's talk about what does make you sell. I mean, a little bit you mentioned, you know, as you're trying to manage the portfolio, you might be trimming if something gets a little bit too big. But that just kind of hinted at it there in that good discussion of Tractor Supply, why you got it now, but you might someday. But what's something you moved away from recently?
You know, we moved away from both Apple and Microsoft recently. The main reason was they were both too big a part of our portfolio. They were both roughly 6%, 5% of our portfolio, you know, at a time when business looked like it could be decelerating for both companies. So we kind of, you know, spread the money out. That's when we go from having 30 stocks in a portfolio to 40 stocks. When you sell the very largest companies and buy smaller growing companies.
But those were not pure sells. Those were trims.
Yeah, they were trims. I can't think of anything we totally eliminated from the portfolio since the beginning of this year, save one stock, United Health Group, which has been one of our great long-term growth stocks. We just thought that it was a technical sale. There was a lot of weakening in it, and you know, we follow our process, and our process told us to get out of it, so we did. And let's see where
I've got to ask a question about that.
Yeah,
because this year, you know, I think until you just mentioned technicals, my audience would have been thinking that your process a little more fundamental based, although you did talk about PE ratio and the rest.
Yeah,
but we've had a very interesting market this year where the fundamentals and the technicals have not agreed. The technicals in January got to all green lights,
yeah,
and everything was positive. The fundamentals were saying recession's coming, this is going to suck. So what do you do when the fundamentals and technicals are in disagreement?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. We probably lighten up and broaden our portfolio. Just we kind of reduce the risk of each single stock. So, you know, if we had a 6% position in Apple, now we have a 4% position, for example, and the money went into a company like Textron that has a better outlook. I will say for United Health, the fundamentals and the technicals were kind of lining up a little bit more similarly. The stock really, right at the start of the year in January, when the rest of the market was doing well, United Health was not doing well. So that was a pretty clear-cut elimination in our regard.
Well, now we're going to get your quick and dirty take on some stocks that my audience is particularly interested in.
Quick and dirty.
Goody, a challenge. This is going to be fun.
Well, we always think it's fun when we get a chance to challenge our guests with your picks. That's what we do in our lightning round. We call it quick and dirty. My guest again, Peter Tuz, president of Chase Investment Counsel. If you want to learn more about him, the firm, Chase Growth Fund, chaseinv.com is where you go looking. And if you want to submit requests for Quick and Dirty in the future, send your name, your hometown, and the ticker symbols you're interested in to Chuck@moneylifeshow.com. We'll add it to our list. Hope it makes it into an interview soon. We start today with a request from Rich in Orchard Beach, Maryland. He wants to know about Orion Office REIT. That's ticker ONL.
Chuck, I am only slightly familiar with Orion Office REIT, but I'm going to call it a sell or a lighten up right here. The very name office scares me right now. I know the company is a little bit different in that regard, and it tends to own, we're going to call it, single tenant office buildings as opposed to large multi-tenant buildings. But, you know, they're in a very difficult environment right now. Add to that the fact that interest rates are rising on debt, and I could see REITs, especially office REITs, just be squeezed for the next few years.
Warning, warning, warning.
So Peter is sounding the warning on office REITs generally, Orion Office REIT, ticker ONL specifically. From Rich in Orchard Beach to Rick in Paducah, Kentucky, we're looking now at Unum Group, ticker UNM.
I'm going to say Unum is a buy right here, Chuck. It is selling for $45, maybe about, seven times earnings, with a yield of about 3%, a tad under 3%. You know, contrast that with the office REIT, but insurance firms tend to do better in rising interest rates environments because they have billions of dollars of investments that they can invest in higher yielding fixed income securities. So, you know, rates rising, cheap stock, decent yield, going to call that a buy.
Let's make some money.
That's a buy on Unum Group, UNM. Morris in Bradenton, Florida, wants to know about American States Water Company, AWR.
American States Water is one of the, I guess, few ways people can invest in, a water utility. But I'm going to call it a sell, too. These things have always amazed me. They sell at 30 times earnings, but their earnings only grow about 5, 6, 7% per year. There are better places to put your money in electric utilities, gas pipelines, et cetera. I just think these things are overvalued relative to their growth rate, and American States Water is the perfect example.
And so while I was hoping we were going to make a splash with American States Water instead...
Whoa, dumber than advertised.
Well, at least dumber than expected, which is why AWR, American States Water Company, is a sell. Ellen in Harbor Springs, Michigan, wants to know about Comerica Incorporated, CMA.
Comerica, probably a lot of regional banks, I'm going to call a buy right here. They are being priced as if we are going into a big recession, but I don't necessarily think that's the case. Again, they have decent yields and are selling for price earning ratios in the 7, 8, 9 range. Most of these banks are far more heavily capitalized and have far better asset quality than they did the last time the economy softened several years ago. I think they'll come through whatever slowdown we have, if we have anything, in flying colors, and you're getting a decent yield to wait. So I would consider Comerica a buy right here.
Money in the bank.
Yes, and in this case, Comerica, CMA, is the bank we are talking about. And last, for Sapin in Anaheim, California, it's Camping World Holdings, ticker CWH.
Oh boy, Camping World! Again, I'm gonna call this a sell as well. I am sure business boomed during the COVID era. I am probably equally sure that business has softened up in the post-COVID era, and there will be a lot of lightly used campers on the market over the next few years, diminishing the need to go out and buy a new camper. The other thing I think that is going to possibly hurt sales is, you know, rising rates on consumer loans would make buying one of these things, which are not cheap purchases, more expensive, kind of like auto loans, but even more so. So it's a discretionary purchase that you could put off in a time of rising interest rates and possibly a softening economy.
So that makes CWH, Camping World Holdings, a sell.
Sell immediately. Entire portfolio at market regardless of cost.
And we have come to the end of our time with Peter Tuz. But Peter, always great to chat with you. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me.
Likewise, Chuck. I look forward to joining you again in the future.
We'll do that. And of course, if you want information on Peter or Chase Investment Counsel and the Chase Growth Fund, CHASX, go to chaseinv.com. We'll be back to wrap up today's show, let you know what's coming tomorrow and more right after this message.